The views expressed in this podcast are solely those of the individuals being interviewed and do not necessarily represent those of the Greater Winter Haven Chamber of Commerce. You're listening to It's Happening in the Haven. I'm your host, Brianna Price. Each episode, I get the privilege to speak to the amazing people taking Winter Haven and its surrounding Central Florida area to the next level. We're future-focused, celebrating our entrepreneurial history and leveraging it for our bright future ahead. This podcast is made possible through the generous support of our sponsors who believe in advancing commerce and community here in Winter Haven.
Hey, Winter Haven, it's Anna here. For the next several weeks, you'll be hearing me doing the interviews instead of our lovely host, Bree, while she's out on maternity leave.
The Low Payment Kings at the Mahalik Auto Group are very proud and excited to be sponsoring another season of the Winter Haven Chamber podcast. Hi, it's Ralph Mahalik Jr., the Low Payment King. I just want to remind everybody that the Low Payment Kings are four stores here in Polk County: Alfa Romeo Fiat of Winter Haven, Dodge Chrysler Jeep Ram of Winter Haven, Lake Wales Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram, and Posner Park Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram Fiat. And we look forward to serving you and saving you more here in 2023. We have 1,700 vehicles in stock and incoming, so we can get you satisfied today or in the near future. We're very proud of our five-star team and all the clients that we've satisfied in 2022 and over the last 57 years with the Low Payment Kings Mahalik Auto Group. We look forward to satisfying you soon, too, in all departments. New and used vehicle sales, service, parts, maintenance, recalls, body shop, collision center, and a whole lot more. We're proud of all the community work we do with various charities and community events throughout Polk County. And the Low Payment Kings are very proud to be part of the fastest growing county in the state of Florida. That's Polk County. When you have time, please like us on all our social media pages and check out lowpaymentkings.com, where you can get pre-approved for your car, truck, van, or SUV, schedule a service appointment, look at our career opportunities at all of our stores, and even get pre-approved for your loan or lease. Again, visit lowpaymentkings.com, call us toll-free soon, and like us on all our social media. God bless you and your family, and I wish you everyone the best of luck in 2023.
Hello, hello. Today we are joined by Mr. Winter Haven himself, Bob Gernert. On today's episode, we talk about Bob's time as the executive director of the Winter Haven Chamber of Commerce, the founding of the Museum of Winter Haven History, and much more. Stay tuned. Well, welcome back, Bob.
Oh, thanks so much.
I'm so happy you're here. I was just saying that I'm so excited to talk to you because I haven't had a chance to really chat with you as much as everyone else in the office has. So I'm really looking forward to it.
And so am I.
Good, good. Well, let's get started. So can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your relationship to Winter Haven?
Of course.
I thought it was I know it's a weighted question.
Yeah, it is. And you have to stop and think, what are they really going to care about right now?
All of it. We care about all of it.
I moved here with my family in 1960.
Oh, wow.
So most of the people listening weren't even born then. I went to Garner Elementary.
Oh, wow.
For a year. I was in the sixth grade. And then I was in the first group of students that went all the way through Westwood after it opened. It was a brand new school then. And then I went to Winter Haven High School and graduated in 1967.
That's awesome.
So that's pretty much, my grandparents had moved here the year before and we came down to visit. And while we were here, quite by accident, my father had gotten into Continental Can Company over in Auburndale and they were looking for a warehouseman, someone to run their warehouse. And
wow.
He got the job. And so the next thing I know, we're moving from Ohio to Florida.
Wow. Where in Ohio?
I was born in Tiffin, Ohio, and we lived in a little town called Bloomville.
Okay. Awesome. Now, what was that like moving to Florida? Because weather-wise, it's totally different.
Well, it was. And it was 2 weeks after Hurricane Donna went through, and Hurricane Donna did a lot of damage here. For me, it was, I was not happy because I had to leave my dog.
Oh, no.
My collie. Well, he was a collie. It was Florida.
Yeah.
He was older. My parents didn't feel like he would do real well in the heat.
Mm-hmm.
So he went to my grandmother's house. But you hate to leave your dog when you're 11, you know?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
I hate to leave my dog now.
Well, true, exactly. But it, you know, it after a while, but by the time I graduated high school, this was home. Mm-hmm. I mean, all of my friends that I really had grown up with were here now. So it just became the logical place, and I really got over my desire to move back. So
yeah.
The rest is history, so to speak.
And it's funny you mentioned that you graduated from Winter Haven High School, because when you first got here, I told you that we found this projector and these old pictures and slides, and there was one package somewhere in there that is all a class reunion of yours.
Oh, wouldn't you know that? Well, I have to say, one of the things that is most special to me about living here all these years is I've got a group of friends mm-hmm. and we have put on every reunion every 5 years.
That's amazing.
And we just celebrated our 55th last year.
Congratulations.
So, yeah, well, we're all, you know, pretty happy that we're on this side of the grass.
Yeah, so. For sure. That is so funny. Yes, there are pictures of your yearbook pictures next to like what was present. No, it was amazing. Like I told you, our team spent a little, maybe too much time looking through everything. It was very fascinating.
And you've developed a real portfolio for ransom and...
Yes.
Yep, I know what you're
exactly,
up to.
Exactly. Got lots of pictures, specifically of Bonnie Parker.
Yes. Well, we'll work on that one. I've got
she's
some
coming
too.
Sometime too. I'll have to show her.
Yeah, she'll love it.
Awesome. So you graduated from Winter Haven High School. What did you kind of do next after that?
I went to Polk Junior.
Oh, wow.
Which became Polk
Community,
and that is now Polk State. Mm-hmm. And then later, I attended classes at Florida Southern Marketing, things
awesome.
Of that nature.
Awesome. That's a good school.
Yes,
I worked there for a time.
Did you?
Yes.
Oh, great. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a great school.
Yeah. So what was your first job out of college?
My first job out of college was at Lakeland Regional Medical Center.
Wow.
And I got a job at the hospital by promotion into a department called Management Engineering. And it was time and motion studies, efficiency studies. And it's interesting that I was in it because it involved math, and I'm not somebody that enjoys math. But while I was in that department, the hospital had an opening in their public relations, at the time, the communications department.
Mm-hmm.
And I desperately wanted to do that. I just had thought publishing a newsletter and all of those sorts of things was so interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So I applied for it, and it wouldn't happen today, but I was able to get the job.
That's amazing.
So I spent the next 11 years at Lakeland Regional, and went to school and learned all I could about the ins and outs of public relations, and I got my accreditation and so on and so forth. So that was my first, professional job outside of college.
That's amazing. 11 years. That's a long time.
Well, and during that time, I served as both the president of the Florida Public Relations Association and the president of the Hospital Council for Florida. So,
wow. Yeah. So was public relations always something that you wanted to go into?
No.
No.
I got into it completely through the back door.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've always felt like when we try to make students choose their major while they're in high school, that we're doing them a disservice.
Mm-hmm.
I realize we need to expose them to professions, but a teacher who had a big influence on my life told me that when I went to college, I should pay attention to the subjects that were easiest for me. Because mm-hmm. When it comes to you easy, those are the things that you will excel in
mm-hmm.
when you're in business. And those are truly, that is what I did best in, writing and things of that nature, which, of course, you have to use those types of skills and communicating. I wasn't always comfortable speaking, but I never met anybody that I was afraid to talk to. So that worked out.
Awesome. Well, clearly that is a good thing, because your job, especially with the chamber, requires you to talk to all sorts of different people.
Absolutely. And that's what I've told people so many times. In fact, I've had a couple of professional colleagues that were in different public relations roles that ended up working in chambers of commerce. And mm-hmm. I said, you're going to find out that there is absolutely no difference in this than representing a company in that regard, because you've got to talk to people, you've got special events, you've mm-hmm. got to tell your story.
For sure.
And your community's story. So awesome. It was tailor-made for me. I was so fortunate to be able to be in that role.
Yeah. Well, we're going to talk about that in a second. But I know before you started at the Chamber, you were in a Leadership Winterhaven class, correct?
I was.
Which class?
Class 11. Amazing. The best one, of course.
The best one, of course. Everyone says that.
I know, they do.
It's a little competition.
Yeah, just a little bit.
Just a little bit. Yeah. Nothing too horrible. It's friendly competition.
Well, and you want them to have some sort of, you know, a real...
A camaraderie.
Passion for their group. So, yeah. And having worked here for 18 years and having a new class every year and everyone telling me they're the best class. So, you know, well, I'd go, yeah, well, maybe, but... Don't forget Leadership 11.
So. Exactly. What was your experience like in leadership?
My experience in leadership was amazing. I had lived in Winterhaven at that time for 31 years.
Wow.
And I thought, there's not a lot about this town that I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, boy. one of the things I realized very quickly was what was going on here that I had no idea about. At that time, there was a wedding dress manufacturer out on Dundee Road.
Really?
That made amazing wedding gowns that wow. were beaded and all of this really intricate work. I never knew they were there.
Yeah.
And of course, I always thought Volka was somebody that was related to Dr. Spock, Mr. Spock. and that was a company that just didn't realize the scope of what they were producing out
yeah.
there. But that was just one of the days that you spend in leadership, and you learn so much about the community and the county.
Yeah. Was that your first experience with the Chamber of Commerce, specifically in Winterhaven?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
So obviously it created a lasting impact because you came back.
it did. We had our own public relations firm at the time, my wife and I.
Wow.
And she came to me and she had read in the Chamber newsletter about the program, and she said, you need to do this. And at the time, I didn't know I have enough hours in the day because our children were small and I was,
when you had a business and that's a full-time job in and of itself.
And I said, when do you expect me to do this? But it really was an amazing experience. And consequently, while I was here as the executive director or president and CEO of the Chamber, many of the people in my class served as president,
yeah.
Bonnie Parker included. So.
Yeah, that's awesome. Oh, that was her class too?
Yes.
Well, I have tons of pictures of you guys in the slides.
Of course. If you've got Bonnie in your class, you're going to have tons of pictures.
Oh, of course you are. That's so funny. Well, I want to backtrack a little bit. So you and your wife had a public relations firm?
Yes.
Awesome. Was it just the two of you?
Well, it was three in the beginning. It was called Gernert, Goddard, and Long.
Okay.
And then... Long decided that they wanted to do something. Long said so long. And so it became Gernert and Goddard. And shortly, like within the year of opening the firm, we were successful in securing the management account for the Florida Public Relations Association,
wow.
which I had just served as president for. Mm-hmm. So there were, I believe, 18 chapters at the time, everywhere from Tallahassee to Miami. So... In the course of the next 10 years, from 1986 to when I came to the Chamber, I made friends and acquaintances and professional relationships all over the state.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it was truly a great professional experience for me, and I've got lifelong friends in mm-hmm. every big city and chapter in the state where they still practice.
Yeah, so, that's awesome.
Yeah.
And the great part about those relationships, too, I think, is that you realize that you're not the only one dealing with certain things, so you can kind of lean on each other and those different challenges and everything like that.
Absolutely. That is the strength of any organization mm-hmm. like that. You don't have to reinvent the wheel.
Exactly.
You can pick up the phone and find out what somebody else had done.
Exactly. Awesome. So in that time... You became the president, CEO/executive director of the Chamber. What was your journey into taking that job?
Well, the person that preceded me, Joyce Davis, tragically died suddenly.
Wow.
In the summer of 90, summer of 95. Mm-hmm. I was on the board here at the time.
Okay.
And I just wasn't sure that I was even going to apply for it because Joyce was a very strong personality.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like the next person that came in was going to, you know, have some pretty big shoes to fill in terms of the board.
Yeah.
And how they would feel about you. But in the end, I decided, okay, I'm going to throw my hat in the ring. And that was in late 95 and went through a series of interviews.
Mm-hmm.
And early, I think it was, they made the official announcement in January of 96 that I was going to come here.
Yeah.
I mean, it was thrilling for me. Here I am in the community I love.
Yeah.
And I get to be the chamber exec, so I get to say all the What are the best things about this community? That's my job, is to get up every morning and look for the very best in this community. And I relish that and I embrace that.
Yeah.
So from there, from 96 on, we began, putting Bob's touch on things.
Yeah.
The chamber, when I came here, was not computerized to any great extent.
Mm-hmm.
They were still maintaining a paper records of members, membership, in conjunction with a computer, but they didn't always
line up,
jive up. Yeah.
Yeah.
And and the other thing that, so that when I came, what I took was the rudimentary system, and I worked with a young man locally, Michael Kingham.
Oh, yeah.
and Mike took the program that we were using and imported it into a more user-friendly system.
That's awesome.
And the day one when I came on board, because I started 2 weeks early,
mm-hmm.
day one when I came on, we converted the database. So that, to me, was a big step forward.
Yeah.
And then by the annual meeting 6 months later, we introduced our first website.
Wow.
Which today would look like a covered wagon compared to a website, but it was for the day, it was pretty cutting edge.
Yeah.
So those were some really exciting things to do right off the bat.
That's awesome. Now, what was that transition from going to owning your own business to being the executive director of essentially like a trade association, a business association?
Well, I think the amazing thing to me mm-hmm. is someone else is responsible for your paycheck every 2 weeks when you don't own that business.
Yeah.
So it had been managing FPRA and other clients was a full-time job mm-hmm. and overview, and it was difficult sometimes to juggle all of the bowling balls that you had in the air. When you come to the chamber, I was much more accustomed from my hospital work to serving one master.
Okay.
And so knowing what my job was and where I was going, I only had this particular organization and the membership to serve.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, that was a much more logical and rewarding daily mm-hmm. job than having to divide my attention into diverse interests.
Yeah.
So consequently, I just really felt like it was my dream job.
Yeah. That's amazing. And then you did it for 18 years.
And they didn't throw me out.
No, they didn't. You retired. That's everyone's dream, to retire out of a job they love.
Isn't it the truth?
Yes, yes. Well, kind of looking back on your career at the Chamber, what do you feel like your biggest accomplishments were?
Well, I think when you ask that particular question, certainly the computerization of the building, mm-hmm. Of the membership, and the early steps into the internet and the World Wide Web,
mm-hmm.
Those types of things were to me really big steps forward for mm-hmm. the chamber. In terms of what I received some accolades for when I retired, I would have to say that anything I accomplished here was because I had fabulous people on my board of directors. You can't get anything done without people that won't get engaged and take the goals and objectives of the organization to move forward. the three things that I think were significant, we were the catalyst in the late 1990s for this community visioning, which was called Our Future by Design.
Yes. We found a lot of papers on this as well.
I'll bet you did.
I don't know if you know this, but our building has about 30 years worth of stuff in it.
Most of it I left here. Yes.
It's all been really fascinating, though, as we've been cleaning out offices, and especially the second floor, we found so many like VHS tapes of different things and a lot of different packets about the community visioning and everything like that. And it's so interesting to see how far everything has come, for
Well, absolutely. And at the time, Lakeland had been through the process about 10 years before, and I kept reading about it and what they were doing and how they were relating it back. And we were having the first board retreat that I worked on.
Wow.
And we were discussing this. And lo and behold, from that retreat, the board came back and said, we think we ought to make this a priority. And the city got on board, and the county.
That's awesome.
United Way. Everybody stepped forward and put money in the pot. And we involved, we invited 400 people from every zip code in Winter Haven, every neighborhood. People received invitations to work on it, and about 180 to 200 people participated.
That's pretty good.
It was.
Yeah.
And it was interesting and rewarding afterwards to see people who came to public meetings and were engaged in things like where the library was built. That the night the city had the big meeting about where the library should be built, there were so many people that had been involved in the visioning.
Oh, that's awesome.
And when the evening was over, there had been a strong feeling that the library should be left where it was. But the majority of the people said they felt like it would be more dynamic and more community-oriented if they moved it downtown. And, of course, it was a big shot in the arm for downtown revitalization.
Yeah.
To bring
it down absolutely. Here. Absolutely.
So the visioning and then the work we did to try to save Cypress Gardens and then transition in supporting Legoland. I think that was important to this community because of what Cypress Gardens had meant to us.
Oh, for sure.
And then it was, I think, important to Legoland after they got here that they had a real partner in us.
Yeah.
So that was important as well.
Now, when you say work to save Cypress Gardens, what do you mean by that?
Well, the gardens closed in April. In fact, it was just about 20 years ago right now.
Yeah.
And when that happened, we were completely caught flat-footed. Nobody really ever felt the gardens would go away.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. I mean, I used to go on school field trips at the end of the year there, for sure.
So I was coming back from Tallahassee with leadership, and we were pulling into the parking lot when Derek Fiecher, who was the at that time was working with the city, wasn't yet city manager, said, "Ladies and gentlemen, they've just announced that Cypress Gardens are going to close in 3 days."
That's crazy.
And it just it just I could not begin to tell you how intense it was here. I could not get the voicemails off my phone fast enough to empty it. By the time I would finish taking calls off, the voicemail box would be full again.
Wow.
And, of course, we were just email was becoming pretty prevalent. And we were getting bunches of those, just scads. And then the media coverage was incredible from all over the United States because the gardens had been – was very well known.
Yeah, for sure.
For many reasons. So it was both traumatic and challenging, and the board immediately turned me loose.
Yeah.
And allowed me to begin organizing some community meetings, and we went to Dick Pope Jr., who was still living at the time, stepped forward and said he would work with us, and he took us to Tallahassee in his airplane.
Wow.
Flew us up there for meetings. And before it, I mean, it was never a given, but before it was all over, the state arranged for the original 30 acres to be purchased by the county for a bargain basement price of $225,000.
Wow.
And then Kent Bisher, who tried to operate it as Cypress Gardens Adventure Park, Kent purchased the remaining what they call development rights, as well as the state purchased, so that the land where the garden sat could only be used for certain uses, and most of it was centered around entertainment.
Okay.
So that's what all of that was about. It was a very complex process.
Oh, I'm sure.
Very nail-biting process.
I'm sure of that, too.
But in the after all the dust settled, and this would be about 2008, 2009, when they were going to close the gardens again because it just wasn't thriving.
Mm-hmm.
The business model was not working anymore.
Yeah.
And we all came to realize that. And I have to give credit to the people with Land South that owned it at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Rob Harper and Brian Philpott both took great pains to make certain that they were trying to market this property to someone who was really going to do something with it. And
absolutely,
they're the ones that met representatives from Merlin Entertainment.
Wow.
at an international theme park meeting. And encouraged him to come and look at the property that the garden sat on. And when he saw it, the president of Merlin said the hair on the back of his neck stood up. He knew it was the place they needed to put their Florida park.
That's amazing.
And, of course, as far as that's concerned, the rest is history. Because
oh, for sure.
Legoland is wildly successful.
And they even brought back the canal ride.
The canal ride.
Yes.
Yes. And I was on it the first day it opened.
Yes.
It was wonderful.
Yes, we were too. It's funny because, like I said, I mean, I remember going every year for end of the school year field trips, but I don't remember that ride.
The park, up until it closed in 2003, they did operate what they called the electric boat rides.
Mm-hmm.
But after the hurricanes in 2004.
Oh, they had to close them?
The canals mm-hmm. were so severely damaged and there were limbs in them and things.
That makes a lot of sense.
And plus, the walls of the canals there at that time were the old wooden planks.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd been in there for years, so there was a lot of rot. They had kind of caved in. So consequently, the canals needed
a lot of work.
Significant amount of work.
Mm-hmm.
And Merlin gets great credit for the investment they must have made to shore up those canals. But, you know, all things considered, I can just about guarantee, because I was fortunate enough to meet Mr. Pope, the founder of Cypress Gardens, several times before he passed away. And I think he would be thrilled at what's happening there, because his park is still essentially operating and entertaining people.
Mm-hmm.
And that was all he ever wanted to do.
Yeah.
Given the fact that we could have lost it, it could have been developed as condominiums or something else. I think we got the best of both worlds.
Yes. And if no one has been to Legoland, it's wonderful.
Oh, I know.
And the Pirate River Quest ride is the canal ride we're talking about.
Exactly. Exactly.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors. We'd like to welcome and thank Advent Health for sponsoring Season 6 of our podcast.
Hi, my name is Dr. Olamide Oshikoya, and I'm here to tell you about the partnership between Advent Health and Rothman Orthopedics that is revolutionizing how care is delivered to patients in Central Florida. As a shoulder and elbow orthopedic surgeon for Rothman Orthopedics, I offer specialized, tailored care to treat conditions such as arthritis, tendon disorders, bone loss, fractures, and instability. My team and I at Rothman Orthopedics have partnered with Advent Health to provide innovative, expert care for joint treatment and sports medicine intervention. Our offered care is tailored to meet each patient's health goals. Next day appointments are available. Please call 844-407-4070 or visit us at transformingortho.com.
And then the third thing that I point to is something that I really enjoyed working on, and I think it's going to have a long-term effect, is the intermodal center that CSX built.
Yes.
That was very contentious. There were folks that lived nearby in an unincorporated area, were very concerned it was going to somehow destroy their the quality of life where mm-hmm. they lived. And we had made trips to Texas to see an, wow. an intermodal center that worked out, that was working in operation out there. And that center had like diesel-operated lifts that,
wow.
that moved the things on and off the train. These are electric.
Yeah.
And these are so quiet. So we just felt like all things considered on 2,000 acres of land in this particular age, if we could put together a distribution center mm-hmm. that land would be used for, this would be something that would carry us into the future for years to
come.
It
absolutely has. I mean, Florida Can is over there now. Yeah. I don't know if they've really released to the public what the new facility is, but they've started, I think, building the 1.6 million square foot structure.
That's awesome.
It's amazing. Good work.
Well, there were a lot of people involved, yeah. trust me. But I was proud of the fact that the chamber never wavered.
Mm-hmm.
It said this is something we have to do for the community,
or
that the community needs. And they lobbied and represented and went to meetings and made investments so that it did become a reality.
That's amazing. Now, what was your favorite part about working at the chamber?
Gosh, that's hard to say. I think it's the fact that every day is different.
Mm-hmm.
And there's never two days are ever the same.
They're really not.
and getting to know such a broad cross section of the community and the people that are operating the businesses. I mean, there are people I know in town now I would have never known had
yeah.
I not been here. It's just a crossroads for so many different interests. Not only the municipal aspect. I mean, working with the city of Winter Haven, mm-hmm. what a great city to work with.
Mm-hmm. We're very fortunate.
And we watched downtown literally come right back to life. When I came here in 96, I think there was one restaurant downtown.
Oh, wow.
Maybe two.
Wow.
And there were hardly any stores. There was no life at night, nothing going on. And, of course, in 95, which was the year just before I came here, Main Street came mm-hmm. into existence. And I give them great credit because they were able to focus attention downtown mm-hmm. and have done such a fabulous job of bringing downtown to life so,
yeah,
so
absolutely.
Often.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, you retired in 2014. Mm-hmm. You said this was the job of your dream job. What made you decide that it was time to kind of move on and go into retirement? Step away, if you don't mind my asking.
No. From my perspective, I felt like I was pretty much at the top of my game mm-hmm. in terms of what I'd done here. And I didn't want to be in a position where they were asking me to
yeah.
leave at some mm-hmm. point. And I think you have, at least from my perspective, I felt like a younger person would be more relatable to a younger business group.
Mm-hmm.
And that it was time for me to step aside and let a younger individual come in and relate to the business community.
Yeah, absolutely.
That just seemed, I wanted to go out on top
yeah.
and feel like I had done a good job for the community, but not stayed too long.
Yeah.
And so I just told my wife, I think, you know, I see the winds of change are going to blow. And so I made a decision to do that. And I've really never regretted it.
Yeah.
A lot of people didn't think I would be happy, but I've stayed involved. I'm a volunteer chair of a city committee, and
mm-hmm.
I operate the museum and
yes,
so
do.
On and so forth. So
I was going to say, I feel like you're just as busy, if not busier now.
sometimes I wonder. You know?
It's not really a retirement, is it?
No, not really. But at least I can pick and choose what
exactly,
I work on now.
Exactly. Awesome. Well, this is kind of a good segue because you are, you know, so involved in the museum. You're often referred to as Mr. Winter Haven. I know you're our go-to person when anyone asks us about history facts. If we don't know it off the top of our head, we say you need to contact Bob at the Museum of Winter Haven History. So can you tell us a little bit about the museum and how it got started?
Yes. Back in 1991, And I had the public relations office, my wife and I. Our office was located on 6th Street next to Northgate Shopping Center.
Okay.
And across the street, there was a home that Mary Jewett had lived in. And Mary Jewett was a very influential early resident. She moved here in 1910.
Wow.
She was a physician at a time when most women weren't physicians.
No.
And she was feisty. She fought for educational facilities and the community, the children of the minority community.
Is this Jewett Academy and Jewett School for the Arts? Okay.
That's who they're named for.
Got it.
And my wife was so upset. This house was being torn down. And I said, I was going out of town for an FPRA meeting. And I said, well, Lakeland's got a group called Historic Lakeland Incorporated. Why don't you call over there and find out if you can get their bylaws and so on and so forth so that and we'll have a meeting and see if there's any interest. So we had when I got back to town, we announced a meeting and we had about 60 people show up to the to the women's club where the museum is located now. And from that very, very, very humble start, we started trying to decide how can we make this into something that's sustainable and that will accomplish something for Winter Haven. Because up until that time, there really hadn't been any.
Yeah.
There is a mention of a group that formed back in the 30s or 40s, but there's no record of anything that they did. So I don't know whether it got off the ground or not. So we formed then, but we didn't know just exactly where we were going to put a museum or if we could even manage that, you know. Consequently, I give complete credit for the catalyst for the museum was Mayor Scott Girard. And Scott came to me in, I believe, about 2000, 2001, and he said, Bob, if the city were to assume the possession of the Women's Club building, would your group be able to operate a museum there or put a museum together? So Scott approached the city, and ultimately they were able to put together an agreement. They took possession of the building, and that gave us the resources that we needed, somebody that would take care of the building. Well, shortly after that, and this was probably 2002, 2004, we have three hurricanes.
Yes.
And before,
in like a month.
Exactly. And before it was all over, the roof of the building came off, the ceiling came down, the floor warped, and things of that nature. Well, the city stepped in after it was all over. Of course, they had it insured, but they literally restored that building than it was before.
Wow.
They put in acoustical tile that looks like it's tongue and groove wood.
Wow.
And it's actually modern acoustical tile. They restored the windows. They had the floors refinished and sanded, and they brought the building back to a luster it hadn't had in years. So that's when we began the process of putting cases together and put some modest displays together. And we opened in early 2006.
That's amazing.
So from there, it's grown, we have gotten so many donations over the years, but they have picked up more and more as more people understand and learn about the fact that we have a museum. We have a Facebook page with 4,200 followers. And, of course, I've written a series of articles about the history over the past 20 years. So a lot of people have read those, and most of those close with the museum is open Saturdays or whatever. So that's how all of that came about. And it's really become, it's my passion, obviously.
Yeah.
And I believe that our founding families have certainly embraced it. They've brought us things that they had kept over the years, and they wanted Winter Haven to have them in perpetuity. And that's what our purposes are.
Yeah.
Our purposes for the Friends of the Museum, which is our not-for-profit group, is education and preservation. We want to take the artifacts that mean something to the community and preserve those, and we want to take every opportunity we can to educate the community on where this community came from, who helped make it what it is today.
That's awesome. Now, were you always interested in history?
No.
No. So where did this come from?
Well, I think it all stems from when my wife came to me and was so upset about that house.
Mm-hmm.
We had been to Savannah for our anniversary.
Oh, and it's a beautiful city.
Oh, I've fallen in love with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you're aware, but seven little old ladies. I don't know if they were little and old, but seven ladies were aware that the Davenport House, which is the very first house they preserved, it was going to be torn down for a parking lot.
Oh, wow.
And they decided it was not going to be torn down for a parking lot. And that's where all of the Savannah restoration and preservation effort came from.
Mm-hmm.
And that was an inspiration to us as well. Well, once we had the meeting and you had people like Lucille Smith, who has since passed, but mm-hmm. she is an Inman descendant.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And the Inmans, of course, founded Florence Villa, mm-hmm. and it was named for Florence Inman. Once we had that in hand, we knew that those people stepped forward and said they wanted to support this mm-hmm. museum. There were descendants here of the Harrises, which had the first commercial and residential building in town.
Wow.
They gave us artifacts that they had in their possession. The Eckelsheimers, who named the community, their great-grandson brought us four phone books from 1912 to 1916 when their family owned the telephone exchange.
Wow.
So you know, these types of things give you the incentive and help build the desire and help you move forward and want to learn more.
Mm-hmm.
So the deeper I got into this, the more interested I became. And of course, then when I started writing about the community, the news chief editor at the time was Wayne Ezell, and Wayne wanted me to write a history column, and we called it Beneath the Chinaberry Tree, which is a jargon that I'm going to use. I'm trying to compile a coffee table book.
Okay.
Of these articles.
Oh, fine.
But that forced me to really delve into the history piece by piece.
Mm-hmm.
You know, who named it? Why is that street that name?
Yeah.
Who built the Ritz Theater and all sorts of things? And before it's all over, I'm spending weekends going through old news chiefs or chamber minutes.
Yeah.
And you know.
Oh yes, there's plenty in my office for you.
Yes. So. So that's really how I got so focused on it. And then in 2015, no, it was before that, right after I came to the chamber, Debbie Harsh, who mm-hmm. was the past president here, Debbie came to me and said she was going to be the leadership chair, and she wanted to know if I would tell the class about the history.
Mm-hmm.
So we started doing this this exercise where we took a long piece of white paper and we put a timeline on it. And then I would mark in when the Ritz was built, when the News Tube was founded, when the Citrus Festival started, so on. And so I've spoken to every leadership class since mm-hmm. 2016. And I think you're on 40 or 41.
We're actually on 42 and class 43 applications. It's May 1st. And they open today.
Wonderful.
So we're rocking and rolling.
So all of those people have come through. Now mm-hmm. the city has asked me to speak to their new employees.
Okay,
and
awesome.
I've been doing this now for almost 2 years. And they have a new city university.
Yes.
They asked me to speak at the first session of that. So the city has reached out and really made the museum a part of their programming as well. That gives it more... I don't know. It makes it a more robust sort of operation when you've got that kind of interest.
Oh, for sure. Now, where do you find all of the information, like the historical information? Is it through old articles? Are there public records at the city?
The city has all of the city minutes, mm-hmm. and I have used them from time to time to determine what went on in a particular year by following those. Their minutes and the chamber minutes are rich with what projects were going on. We've been trying to determine for a long time when Lake Silver Park came about.
Oh, wow.
And I think I found a mention in the chamber minutes.
Amazing.
That it was at least the first seeds of an idea were in 1937.
Wow.
because the chamber was discussing a community recreation area at Lake Silver. So
there's minutes from 1937 in my office?
Absolutely.
Oh, my gosh. I don't think I realized that.
They go all the way back to 1923.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
That's why, you know, I've talked with both Katie and Sarah Beth that if for any reason you ever decide you don't want to keep them, don't dispose of them.
Yeah.
They're too valuable.
Oh, for sure.
But I would think you'd want them anyway because they mean so much to the chamber.
And especially it being our 100 years.
Absolutely.
Yes.
So you've got that. And then old news chiefs. We have every bound copy of the news chief from 1980 to 1912.
Wow.
Mrs. Burr's book, Josephine Burr wrote a book, The History of Winter Haven. She compiled a great deal of her book from the news chief archives. So I use her book frequently, and she tells stories in her book that I repeat often, and things like that. But there are some pamphlets I've purchased pamphlets off of eBay, and you never know where you're going to find a little nugget of history.
That's amazing. I'm sure it takes a lot of time to kind of go through all of those and look at the nitty gritty details of everything that's written.
It does, but that's my idea of a wild time.
That's amazing. Oh my goodness. Well, what is your favorite or most interesting fact about Winter Haven that you've learned throughout the years?
You know, there's so many.
Yeah.
But I think the one that I find really impresses people involves George Jenkins.
Okay.
When he opened his first store, he sold 30 shares of stock. And after the store was open, he felt like the employees would be more loyal and work harder for the success of the store if they were part owners. So he gave them all shares of stock, and he gave them a raise so they could pay for the stock.
Oh, wow.
So that's where the original early ideas about employee-owned business came from. But up from 1930 until 1959, the only way that people that work for Publix got stock was if Mr. Jenkins gave it to them.
That's interesting.
Right. So in 1959, they made it possible for any employee to buy stock. And I just learned recently of a cashier who was working for the company at that time who began purchasing stock, and she worked there for many, many years, retired, and then ultimately passed away, and all of her possessions and everything were left to her granddaughter. Her granddaughter took the public stock to the company and to see them about cashing it in, and that cashier's public stock was worth $19 million. And she never worked at anything other than a cashier's position in that company.
Oh, my goodness.
So
that's amazing.
And that's just one of many stories like that I've heard. And all of that started right here on 4th Street.
That's amazing.
In that little
Tempo building. 1930.
Tempo 1930.
Which is to be something else soon, I think.
Yeah, we're hoping.
We're hoping.
I'd love it if Publix would make it a wine and cheese shop, but I don't think that's going to happen.
We can forward the idea, don't worry. Okay, good. That's awesome. Well, speaking of the fact that it's the Chamber's 100-year anniversary, do you have any fun facts about the Chamber?
Oh, my goodness.
I know I'm putting you on the spot.
Yeah, you are. You didn't put that on my list.
I'm sorry. I told you I go off topic.
Well, we're still going through minutes to determine just, you know, some of the things that happened over the years. One of the things I found in the minutes that I thought was very unusual was that a chamber of commerce or a group in Arkansas or somewhere, wherever Will Rogers was from, contacted the chamber and wanted them to send a letter of endorsement for his museum. And the minutes of the chamber reflect that the letter was sent. And
interesting.
So, you know, your reach is that far. They also, the minutes reflect that they were one of the first chambers to submit a letter of endorsement for the University of South Florida in Tampa.
That's amazing.
They were looking at bringing a junior college to this community in 1957,
mm-hmm.
and Polk Junior opened in 64.
Wow.
They started the Bankers Cup. They mm-hmm. started the Citrus Festival the first year.
I didn't know that.
They started Carols in the Park.
No kidding.
The first year it was a chamber function. Just so many things that the chamber gave birth to, and then someone else took and ran with it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of interesting history here, and you're going to learn a lot more about it in the coming year.
Yes.
I'm sure.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm very excited. Now, I know probably some of you can hear the lovely little taps in the background, and that is because our second floor is under construction, and it just so happens that they're working right under the podcast studio today. What are your favorite memories in this building, and what are you looking forward to in the renovation?
I think the things I enjoyed most were the meetings that we had on the second floor.
Mm-hmm.
We would have, you know, the candidate breakfasts and other meetings downstairs, and it was always great to have such a wonderful building to work with.
Yeah.
It was so functional.
Mm-hmm.
It had the kitchens and everything were laid out and worked well, because most chambers don't have the luxury of a facility like this.
They do not.
No.
I've definitely learned that.
And look here now, you've got a podcast studio.
Yes.
Who'd have ever thought? One of my favorite pastimes when I was here, and it's only because it aggravated the mud out of the business news media, is we started our blog in 2006.
Wow.
And I was not a big fan of blogs. In fact, I had ridiculed them in the beginning. I was becoming an old curmudgeon. And my son was helping put together a new website for the chamber. His company
mm-hmm.
was going to be on a software called, I believe, Ruby on Rails, if I'm not mistaken.
Interesting.
Very unusual. But anyway, he calls me and he goes, "Dad, you're not going to like this, but you've got to do a blog." I said, "Nick, you know I don't like blogs. I think they're a waste of time, and somebody's, you know, is spouting off about something they don't know anything about." Being a real curmudgeon. So anyway, I think the first thing I reported was that Nick Christie was closing his restaurant.
Oh, wow.
And did you ever go to Christie's?
I don't think so.
Well, it's where Mayonnaise is now.
Oh, okay.
And it was an absolute institution.
Yeah.
Most of the celebrities that ever went to Cypress Gardens and entertained out there ate at Nick Christie's. He had a wall of their photographs. But
oh, that's sad.
It was. And when it just so happened that I knew his maitre d' very well.
Mm-hmm.
She called me when they had signed the papers and gave me information first.
Yeah.
Well, what I learned very quickly was that I had a pipeline to the business community that nobody else had.
Oh, for sure.
And I started coaxing my members, "Hey, if you're going to build a new building, or you're going to buy something and open a second location or do this or do that, let me know mm-hmm. when you're ready to go public so that I will tell your story the best possible way and give all the reasons that you're doing it," and so on and so forth. And it got to where, and they were all friends of mine. I really had great relations mm-hmm. with the news media. But one of the fellas that worked at the Ledger told me one time, he says, "It's so embarrassing when you scoop us." And after having to work and answer hard questions for about 30 years in the news media, it was great to be able to get even.
Yeah.
So that's was one so of the things funny. I most enjoyed.
Yeah. And now we're renovating it.
Oh, and the lobby, and just walking into the lobby, it's so cutting edge.
Oh, for sure.
Great.
It's beautiful.
And I don't know a lot about what the second floor is going to look like, but I know the boardroom we've put up here and everything, the mm-hmm. changes, really bringing the building forward. It's going to be so much more functional.
Yeah. Well, we're excited about the second floor for sure. And I know that the table that you loved so much down there has found a home with the Polk County Public Schools. I don't know if anyone told you that.
No, they didn't.
Yes.
That's wonderful.
Yes. It actually fits in the elevator.
Oh,
Yes. Well, cut up.
Oh, okay.
Or taken apart. Yes. Yes. Frederick Hyde wanted to redo some of the decorations in his conference room, and the table fits. So it's got a beautiful new home.
It's perfect.
Yes.
And he'll be able to, he'll put a glass top on it. You can see all the people's names that are written into it. It's a soft wood.
It is.
Every time somebody would sign a contract or anything, their name was there.
We had Chaser or Chargers, so that way it didn't happen anymore. That was, I think, my first lesson when I first started here was, if you're going to be writing on this table, you have to use the Charger.
Yeah.
and a coaster for sure.
Absolutely.
Yes. Well, what has been your favorite part about watching Winter Haven grow as it has over the last several years and decades?
Oh, goodness.
I know. I'm giving you such hard questions.
In looking at the community right now, what makes me the most proud is the diversity and the array of businesses and entertainment venues and functions we have. I mean, and when I say that, it sounds very nebulous, but you've got the Restored Ritz Theater, and it's being operated very consistently and bringing people downtown. You've got the Dairy Dome. What an amazing historic site. You've got Grove Roots, a great craft beer place.
A very family-friendly, too.
Gathering place. And I give, I have to say that our business community is responsible for a lot of this. A lot of what I just described wouldn't have been possible without the 610 Corporation.
Yeah.
And they're not the only ones, but you've got Haven Coffee Roasters.
Mm-hmm.
You've got Lucille's, that just American Cafe. Very wonderful, different, unusual businesses and not cookie cutter. So that our community's got such a great personality. You've got this, the city has invested so many millions of dollars in our parks downtown and in Lake Silver Park and the skate park. All of those things contribute to a quality of life that's just amazing. And so many communities, I mean, every time someone complains about a new hotel or something, I often say, you should live in a town where the biggest thing that happens is a fast food restaurant opens. And they are out there. There are towns that have no hope, and their young people have no place to aspire to work. We don't have that problem. If anything, our challenge right now is with all the possibilities we have. Our young people are probably confused about just exactly what they want to do.
It's true. When you have so many choices, it's a very fortunate, you know, blessing to have all the choices in front of you. But you're right, it can be overwhelming and daunting about what you choose to put your passion into.
Sure. But at least we've got the opportunities.
Exactly, exactly.
And we're not without our challenges, and I understand that. But with growth comes challenges. But without growth, you don't have any resources. Your community stagnates, and you're not going to have anybody moving here. I mean, and those things all make for a great economy. You've got to have some growth and responsible growth. And I think that a lot of what's happening here is going to pay dividends for years.
Amazing. Well, I only have one more question, and that is, do you have any words of advice for our chamber team?
Oh, gosh, just keep on keeping on. I mean, you are bringing a youthfulness and an enthusiasm to the table that is necessary. A chamber's got to have the lifeblood of a chamber is the attitude of its staff. And then, because that's contagious to the volunteers and then on to the membership. And as long as you're out there bringing the podcasts and the other things to the table that are on the cutting edge of communications and economic development and things of that nature, you're going to be just fine. I don't know what I would tell you to do any better than what you're doing.
Well, thank you, Bob. I really appreciate you coming over today. I know this isn't your first rodeo on the podcast, but I'm so glad that you're here today and are just able to chat with us.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
It's been very fascinating.
All right.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello, I'm Greg Littleton, President and CEO of Citizens Bank and Trust. As a family-owned community bank, the strong business model developed by our founders has remained solid for over 100 years to work with customers who live and operate within our market. Our employees work closely with customers to get to know each one by name. We support local organizations that provide important programs and services for the betterment of our community. In addition, our team also gives back to local nonprofits by volunteering thousands of hours each year to a variety of organizations. If you're looking for a bank with people who treat you like family, consider you and your financial needs the number one priority, and most of all, provide you stability and commitment for the long haul, then I invite you to stop by any of our conveniently located offices or visit us at citizens-bank.com to learn more. At Citizens Bank and Trust, we're proud to be your bank. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender. Promotional offer may end without notice. Loans subject to credit and underwriting approval. Appraisal, insurance, and other requirements or restrictions may apply. See lender for details. NMLS ID 528015.
A big thank you to Bob Gernert for being today's guest. Be sure to tune in every week to It's Happening in the Haven, available on all your favorite podcasting platforms. To learn more about Winter Haven and the Chamber, visit winterhavenchamber.com or follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. We hope you've learned a little bit about our community today and even more about the people who are shaping its future. After all, no true community exists without the people who form it. Winter Haven. Some call it a haven, we call it home.